You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the weekend. And welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Friday's show is sponsored by our friends over at Action Heat, which makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Stay toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter on cold days like today in Houston with Action Heat Apparel and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. I say happy Friday because, well, in addition to it being the obvious, it's a start to the weekend, it should be a pretty pleasurable Friday here in Houston with the Rockets coming off a 15-point win on national television Thursday night over LeBron James and the LA Lakers, a statement win for the Rockets. They're now just 13-14 in the year, which is certainly disappointing, but they've won two consecutive games, each against quality opponents in the Portland Trailblazers and now the LA Lakers. So they do seem to be regaining their footing just a bit. It's far too premature to say that they're back. I'm not going to make that mistake again after the five-game winning streak at 8-10, which was followed by four consecutive losses and a 7-9 stretch of games in which the Rockets dropped. But they at least seem to be finding their form in a good time because the schedule's not easing up anytime soon. In Memphis tomorrow night, we'll have a recap for that, and then home for the Utah Jazz on Monday night. So this stretch of Western Conference heavyweights continues. At least six of the next nine games are within the friendly confines of Toyota Center, so the Rockets have that going for them. But today's show, we're not going to spend too much time talking about any one individual game. If you want to hear about what the Rockets did right in Thursday night's big win over the Lakers, headlined by James Harden's historic fourth career, the first player ever to do this, 50-point triple-double, then check out our recap. What today is going to be a show about is previewing the significance of December 15th, which is tomorrow, Saturday. That's the unofficial opening of trade season around the NBA and what that means for your Rockets. So we're going to discuss that primarily in today's show. And then to finish up, I've been asked by a few folks on Twitter about my reaction to some of the James Harden officiating complaints. He went to the line 19 times, made 18. I largely think that's a non-story, but I will address it in the third and final segment of today's show. The first two, though, I want to discuss the Rockets and the trade market because we've been talking about it a lot this season, and with this being the 15th of December, tomorrow it is, and there's a TV special with Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe of ESPN, two of the league's best insiders, so certainly we should have some intel that we get tomorrow morning, I'm guessing involving the Rockets, because certainly Daryl Morey is aware that at 13-14, a third of the way through the season, you're on pace to win 39 or 40 games. That's far below expectations for a team that won 65 a year ago and is all about contending for championships in the waning years of Chris Paul's prime. So they need more defense, even with the recent uptick in play. They're still bottom 10 in the league on the defensive side. They need more depth. The Rockets are as aware of that as anyone. So I think especially once all of their players can be dealt, and not just here in Houston, but around the league, December 15th is the date in which players who signed offseason contracts can be moved. Here in Houston, the Rockets have two roster spots occupied by Carmelo Anthony, who hasn't even been with the team for nearly a month, and the Rockets have already expressed an intent to part ways, and another roster spot by Michael Carter-Williams, who is with the team, but clearly has completely lost the trust of Mike D'Antoni and the coaching staff. So if the Rockets want to fortify their depth, currently two of their 15 roster spots are occupied by two players that are not going to be long-term fixtures here in Houston from any indication that I get. And they also have one regular contributor now in Daniel House, who is on a two-way contract, and the Rockets need to find a way to keep him long-term if he continues to play the way he has, especially in the two recent games against the Blazers and the Lakers. More on that in a little bit. But to lead off, I want to discuss the potential for bigger moves and why, in my opinion, I'm not anticipating anything big involving the Rockets right out of the chute. Now, I do think, looking at situations around the league, there are some shoes that are likely to drop. It seems the Suns want to move on from Trevor Ariza. They held him out of a game this week. The Lakers seem to be the obvious suitor there. I could see that happening early on. There's also a situation evolving with Jabari Parker in Chicago. I'd be a bit surprised if the Rockets were interested in him because he's shooting below 30% on threes this year. I'm not sure where the fit is in Houston, though he is just 23 years old and a talented player. There are situations like those, which are basically just more expensive versions of Carmelo Anthony in Houston, off-season signings that just aren't working out as planned, and teams want to move on as quickly as possible. And could the Rockets get involved? Perhaps. But the reason I'm skeptical about the Rockets getting involved is because to make the math work for any player of significance, you would have to be trading Brandon Knight's contract. And as mentioned all season long, that is your ticket to stay in the running for bigger deals down the line without having to cut into, realistically, your core from the 65-win team a year ago, which means Eric Gordon or PJ Tucker, because, of course, we can all assume that Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella, they're off limits. But in terms of making salaries work, the Rockets, as not just an above-the-cap team, but a luxury tax team, the minimum salaries aren't really going to acquire that much around the landscape. To come close to matching salaries, you have to send out something of significance. And if the Rockets were to make a move tomorrow involving Brandon Knight's contract, they'd largely be locked in to whoever they acquire. Now, theoretically, you'd be able to move them individually, but you would not be able to aggregate them. You'd not be able to put them in packages, so it would greatly diminish your flexibility. So that's why I'm not anticipating anything major for the Rockets tomorrow. I know they've been linked in the past few days to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but he's a guy that, to me, if you squint hard enough, you can see positives there because he's shown flashes. He is just 25 years old and being a good defender. Last year, he shot over 38% from three. The bigger concern with Pope is that if the Rockets were to trade for him, they would not have his bird rights. So I don't know if they'd be able to keep him beyond this season. They wouldn't have any leg up on retaining him. And then they'd lose the Knight salary slot, which, as mentioned, not just at the deadline, but also this coming summer is instrumental in the Rockets being able to package and make salaries work for potential quality players around the NBA. And if the Rockets were to cash that Knight chip now, whoever they acquire would largely be for keeps. There'd be a small possibility that you could move them later on, but seeing as how you couldn't put them as part of a package, it would greatly diminish your offers, and at that point, you shouldn't be planning on that scenario. It's not that you'd be 100% be locked in, but by and large, if you take away your flexibility at the trade deadline, and if it's an expiring contract, you'd also be largely taking away your possibilities this summer, because even if you did re-sign them, you wouldn't be able to trade them. So if you trade Brandon Knight tomorrow for a player on another team, you should feel pretty good that he's a guy that you want to keep, that you see him as a fit. And while I would love for that to be the case, now, of course, the Rockets with Brandon Knight's contract still largely seen as a bit of a negative asset since he's only played 4 minutes in the past 19 months or so, I would love for the Rockets to be able to strike a big deal. I just don't see it out of the chute because there are so few sellers. I don't see the Rockets being willing to do it for Ariza or Jabari Parker for reasons described earlier. I also don't think that, you know, in spite of some of the narratives out there, I don't think the Rockets see a 33-year-old Ariza as really the solution for everything that's going wrong or has gone wrong. Hopefully, knock on wood, they're starting to fix that. But beyond the fact that the Rockets would need to line up a fit, there are so few sellers around the league, and two of them, the Suns and the Bulls, we've identified. Beyond that, there's so much parity, certainly in the Western Conference, where we've talked about 1 through 14 is so jam-packed, all within about 5 games in the loss column, but really the East is as well. Other than 4 teams, the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Cavs have already sold off to a large degree, the Hawks and the Bulls, we mentioned the Bulls with Jabari Parker. Everyone else in the East is, at a bare minimum, at least within 2 games of the playoffs or currently in the playoffs. So based on the parity in both of these leagues and the fact that there's no aggregation deadline, there's no real incentive for someone to make a deal in mid-December. What's probably going to happen is that the trade market will take until January and maybe later in January to and closer to the early February deadline for teams to decide, okay, this probably isn't our year, and at that point, maybe we should try and get something for a player that's likely to leave anyway, or perhaps better position ourselves for the summer in terms of more cap flexibility or draft picks, whatever may be best for a particular situation. There could be a number of minor deals right out of the gate, and perhaps some of those could involve the Rockets. More on that in segment two, because certainly they have 2 roster spots tied up right now in MCW and Melo that could better be used to fortify depth, which has plagued the team at various points all season long. But as far as any larger deals, the reason I think this December 15th date is a little bit overblown, it's big from the standpoint of more flexibility. Teams can start to get in offers, but because there's so much parity, there's not that much incentive to actually get a deal to the finish line, because what happens if somebody offers more? There's a reason why it takes until deadlines for a lot of teams to move, because they want to see if situations might end up working to their favor in terms of leverage. So typically deadlines exert pressure, and right now there isn't a deadline. There used to be a couple of years ago, because the way it used to be in the NBA until the last two seasons, the trade deadline was in late February, so there was about a 5 to 7 day window after December 15th in which teams could make trades, and then whoever they traded, which could theoretically also include players that were signed in the offseason, that December 15th date has long been there under the current collective bargaining agreement, well, the 60-day period that must expire before you can aggregate salaries, that would still be able to lapse those 60 days before the February trade deadline. Now that is not the case, because since the deadline has been moved up to early February before the All-Star break earlier in the season, the advantage is that it provides teams more flexibility to kind of mold in any new parts they get with additional practice time. That week off for the All-Star break can really help in terms of getting your new pieces acclimated to the city, the team, whatever it may be. That's the upside, is that you're not having as many truly late season moves in which even if the player makes sense on paper, you can't make the fit work. The downside is that that 60-day period now comes before the December 15th date in which trade season kicks off. So that was the one thing, the fact that there was a bit of an aggregation deadline on top of being able to trade players that signed in the offseason, that served as an impetus for moves. And the aggregation deadline last Friday has already come and gone. That's when we saw the George Hill trade from Cleveland to Milwaukee, with the Bucks shedding salaries largely, John Henson and Matthew Dellavedova back to Cleveland in that deal, with the Cavs also getting some draft compensation for taking on those contracts. So to me, because the aggregation deadline has already passed, there's no big rush to make a move, and because there's so much parity in both conferences, and the fact that of the five teams that are out of it, as I look at it, it's really just the Suns, the Bulls, the Hawks, the Cavs, and the Knicks, and of those, we already know who's available from the Suns and the Bulls. It's Trevor Ariza and Jabari Parker. I don't really buy either as a fit that the Rockets would move Brandon Knight's contract for, especially after the aggregation deadline. The Cavs have already sold off to a large degree. George Hill, Kyle Korver, they're already gone. I guess if you look at the Hawks and the Knicks, you can look at Kent Bazemore of Atlanta, who's been a 3-and-D target for Houston in the past. Conceivably, they could knock down that door. That's about the only fit that I could get. Maybe Courtney Lee with the Knicks as well as someone they'd look at moving. But at this point, the question is, are you willing to cash in your chips? Do you see that player as being worth it? Because you can't aggregate salaries. And in the case of those teams, would they make a move now, or would they think that maybe they can get more if they wait until later in the season and more teams come into focus in terms of who the potential buyers are, who the potential sellers are, because there's so much uncertainty with the landscape of the league standing-wise as jam-packed as it is at the moment. So I wouldn't write off the possibility, but as far as any big deals, I'm not seeing anything on the immediate horizon for the Rockets. I would love to be wrong. But for the Rockets to make a move involving Brandon Knight's contract, they've got to feel pretty good, in my opinion, that the guy they're getting is a fit that they think can be the missing piece for them this season. And while I'd be happy if they find that on day one of the unofficial opening of trade season, I'd also be a little bit surprised. I would keep expectations in check, maybe look for more minor moves in this month of free agency, the first few weeks of trade season, I should say, not free agency, than anything major. Now, we'll talk more about the minor moves in just a moment, the potential ones, that is. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at Action Heat, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And Action Heat, as mentioned earlier, they make the world's best battery-heated clothing, offering you heat on demand at literally the touch of a button. With a product line starting at just $39, Action Heat Clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat through the use of heating panels similar to those of a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees, and they're powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours per charge. The batteries can also recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're using them. Action Heat offers both men's and women's products, with new styles and models just released for this winter season. They allow you to stay warm and cozy on cold days like today in Houston from head to toe, with offerings like heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even undergarments. is perfect for anyone on your holiday shopping list. Really, anybody that loves the outdoors or just hates being cold. The best part, of course, we've got a special deal for our Lockdown Rockets listeners to save 20% off your entire order. To get that, just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything they've got. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. That's our sponsors over at Action Heat. Let them keep you toasty warm during your outdoor activities all winter long, and we thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. So jumping back into the program, we spent the first few minutes discussing the opening of trade season around the NBA, which tomorrow, Saturday, December 15th, is, and the potential that has for deals involving the Rockets and other teams, because that's when off-season signings can be dealt, and the Rockets have two in Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony that I think everyone acknowledges are failed off-season signings at this point. So in theory, it's a date that you could see moves. However, as mentioned in segment one, based on the parity of the league, how few sellers there are at this point based on the conference standings, I'm not anticipating anything major in terms of a move involving Brandon Knight's contract. If something involving Brandon Knight were going to happen, I think it would have happened by last Friday's aggregation deadline if they were close on that front. If they were to make a move now without being able to combine the player in packages later in the season, it would have to be for a player the Rockets really see as a fit, not just this year, but long-term contractually as well, if it's an expiring contract, because they need to be able to keep them. They wouldn't be able to use them as a trade asset this summer either. And I'm just skeptical that a player of that ability is going to be available for the reasons just stated on the market on December 15th. I would love to be wrong, and Daryl Morey is as creative a GM as it gets in the NBA and really in sports, so I wouldn't write it off. Again, there is going to be a TV special, 10:30 a.m. Houston time on ESPN2. Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe of ESPN, two of the best insiders around the entire league. So if you want intel, I'm sure the Rockets will come up, because even though they've won two games in a row, they are 13-14. They're relatively underachieving, on pace to win just 39 or 40 games a third of the way into the season. So yeah, she'll hear the Rockets exploring the market and potential fits out there, and that's Daryl Morey doing his due diligence. I'd just be surprised if anything major were to get to the finish line this early. However, it would not surprise me if there was something minor involving Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony, because the Rockets do have a reason, even though the bench has been fortified of late, even if you buy that with the return of Brandon Knight, Daniel House giving them a jolt, he was plus 18 in the win over the Lakers, even if you buy that, okay, they feel pretty good about this 9-man rotation that they have at the moment, and really it could be 10 men in a couple of weeks whenever James Ennis gets back from that hamstring injury. So depth isn't as sore of a spot as it was a couple of weeks ago when they had all those injuries and they had, what, 9 points? They were the lowest scoring bench at the time. They scored 9 in an overtime loss at Washington when the team ended up scoring 125 in regulation. Just crazy stuff like that. The Rockets seem to be bouncing back off the mat, at least in terms of depth and bench issues. Not going to say it's fixed, but they're not in as dire straits as they were a couple of weeks ago. That said, there is still a force that's going to push a deal relatively quickly, and that force is Daniel House's two-way contract. We mentioned last week that when Gary Clark got his standard deal, the Rockets, the reason that it was linked between waiving House unexpectedly, even though he was playing well, and then Clark getting that deal, was that Clark, when he got the 15th roster spot at the time, then the only way you could keep House was by giving the second two-way contract slot that had previously gone to Clark to House. So effectively, with Clark's two-way deal about to run out, then the Rockets had to make a move on that one way or another if they wanted to keep him up with the team, and they think long-term, even though he's in a bit of a shooting funk now, that he'll still be an asset, including potentially this season. Then you had to figure out what you were going to do with House. So basically, they bought time by moving House to the two-way, and by virtue of doing it in a rare period of 2 days off between games, the Rockets were able to let House go through waivers and bring him back without even having to miss a game. That said, the clock is running on House as well. As I understand it, courtesy of resident Rockets capologist David Wiener, a.k.a. Beamathog on Twitter, we've had him on the show before, it's actually a prorated two-way contract at this point in the year for House, which, as I understand it, when he signed it last week, only had about 32 days left on it, which would mean right now he has about 25 days or less left on it. That's under a month. And for a player that's been as instrumental as Daniel House has been this month for the Rockets bench, they have got to figure out a way to keep him. So that's one reason why, sooner rather than later, the Rockets are going to have to figure out, even if it's not an external acquisition just to keep the bench as you have it now, that two-way that Daniel House is on now, that's not the permanent solution. That's just basically something that buys time for the Rockets to, well, first they want to make sure that he continues his current level of play, and then it gets them into the period in which hopefully they can trade either Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony, because with them being a luxury tax team, even if they don't get assets back, and they probably won't because neither player has shown much in terms of being a desired commodity around the league, Carmelo Anthony is probably a bit better than MCW, but at this point, Melo's reps have been seeking out a landing spot for nearly a month now, and they still haven't found one. So I'm not optimistic about being able to trade those guys for assets, and also their salaries are so small. The idea that the Rockets need their $2 million a year salary to add to any other player, Brandon Knight, even Eric Gordon, although I don't think they're looking to trade Gordon by any means at this point. I know he's had a disappointing start, but I think they still view him as part of their core. I know there's that theory out there, but the reality is minimum contracts are so small, I don't think the Rockets had a deal that they couldn't have made work, say, by the aggregation deadline, because they did have Marquese Chriss and his $3.6 million salary able to be dealt at that time. So no, I don't think there's going to be any big move that they're just waiting for MCW or Melo and their $2 million a year salary or slightly above to fill out. I would love to be wrong, but I doubt that happens. I think the more reasonable explanation is that the Rockets are hoping that they can find a taker for one of those guys to help mitigate the luxury tax impact. And then once that happens, then you'll have the extra roster spot that you can use to get House for the entire season. Ideally, you would get a small asset, but considering the other team would probably be taking the financial hit off of your hands, I think it's more that you might have to pay a small asset to get them to do you that favor. And worst case, if it doesn't work out, then the Rockets could just cut eventually before the 25 days or however long it is left on House's two-way contract. They could just cut Carter Williams or Carmelo to free up that roster spot. It's not that I think they would let House walk if he continues to contribute at this clip. They would find a way to deal with the situation and keep him. It's just clearly they would prefer, and that's why they want to buy time until after the 15th, to be able to trade one or both of those guys to reduce the luxury tax impact, and then from there you'll have the roster spot to get Daniel House the real deal that he deserves. There's also, of course, the benefit that if there's a situation for Carmelo Anthony or Michael Carter-Williams where conceivably there's a team that would actually play them at this point, which I doubt for reasons laid out earlier and the fact they haven't been all that great here in Houston. But I'm sure the Rockets want to do right by them as well. There are two guys that gave the Rockets the benefit of the doubt. Michael Carter-Williams signing on July 2nd for the minimum. Carmelo Anthony, he had another suitor, at least one, in the Miami Heat. So they want to do right by them organizationally. But bigger picture, it's about trying to mitigate the luxury tax consequences as best you can. That's not unique to Tillman Fertitta. Any team would do it. But there is an incentive to do it sooner rather than later, because the clock is ticking. Some point in January, early January potentially, is when those 25 days, however many are left, on the Daniel House two-way contract are going to expire. And if he continues to play as well as he has, then he's going to force his way into that real contract with the Rockets. And at that point, you will have to figure out a way to clear a roster spot. So while I'm not anticipating anything major involving the Rockets out of the gate in terms of the opening of trade season, December 15th, now that offseason signings can be dealt, something minor in terms of freeing up that roster spot for Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony, I would anticipate that. It doesn't have to be on day one, but within the first couple of weeks of free agency, I do think it's something the Rockets are going to be working very hard to do for the joint benefits of reducing the luxury tax bill and freeing up the ability to bring back, or retain, I should say. It's not bringing back, because Daniel House is there now, but to give him back that standard contract and make sure that he's there through your playoff run and really the entirety of this season, assuming he continues to play at the high level, which he's done in recent days. So, to sum up on the trade market, not anticipating anything major out of the chute from the Rockets, would love to be wrong, and if I am, then certainly we'll jump in with a show this weekend breaking it down, but I do think they're going to be looking at minor moves to free up roster spots, because in addition to just needing more depth, ideally I think you'd free up both roster spots, and then in addition to retaining House, you'd also have that second roster spot to bring in even more depth, because certainly injuries are going to happen, especially with a 33-year-old Chris Paul, Brandon Knight coming off all the issues. There's a reason he hasn't played with Knight in the last 19 months. So I think ideally you'd be able to use both of those spots, one for House and then another to fortify the depth with another outside player, be it a trade or current free agent. But at a bare minimum, you've got to free up one roster spot. So that's why I do think sooner rather than later, there will be incentive to get something to the finish line, probably with Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony. Final segment of Friday evening show. We spent most of the show today discussing the unofficial opening of trade season, which launches Saturday, December 15th. If you want more intel on that, check out Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe's show on ESPN2 at 10:30 a.m. Saturday morning, when I'm sure they'll have intel really about situations all around the league, but certainly with the Rockets. They're 13-14, even though they've won two straight games over the Blazers and the Lakers. They're still well below expectations a third of the way through the season. So certainly Daryl Morey is going to want to make moves to improve the defense, improve the depth, really just try and get as many bodies as he can, because the Rockets, with Chris Paul's remaining prime years, they are all in. They're not going to look to pivot to next season at any point. They are all about trying to figure out a way to salvage this season and give themselves the best shot at contention as they possibly can. So to me, that's that, and of course tomorrow night's game, Rockets in Memphis against the surprising Grizzlies. Those are the big items, and that is clearly the emphasis, I think, for the Rockets the next couple of days. Organizationally, they're worried about the trade market, and then, of course, on the floor, they're worried about the game in Memphis, which, of course, we'll have a recap of, I believe, Sunday morning, whatever happens on Saturday night as the Rockets take on the Grizzlies in a Western Conference showdown, and the Rockets hope to complete a 3-0 week. Will it happen? Stay tuned. That, in my opinion, is the focus of the Rockets. What I don't think is the focus of the Rockets, despite it being the focus of NBA Twitter, is the aftermath of the Lakers win, and particularly the whining from various members of Lakers Twitter and NBA Twitter about James Harden getting 19 free throws. He made 18 of them in his historic 50-point triple-double, the fourth of his career, which no other NBA player has ever done, and Harden has done it before even turning 30 years old, to show how ridiculous James Harden, the reigning MVP, and his certain, at this point, Hall of Fame career is. Yes, he is an all-timer already, so salute to James for that. But as far as my thoughts, and I've been asked about the reaction, I honestly don't have many. It's pretty clear, number one, that those are fouls. He's drawing contact as defined by the rule book. Everything that I saw was justified. The Rockets were asked about it at practice today. They did practice at Toyota Center early afternoon before boarding the flight to Memphis for tomorrow night's game, and the Rockets just largely shrugged their shoulders and to some extent laughed. Mike D'Antoni's quote about the Lakers pouting and putting their hands behind their back to seemingly avoid fouling Harden, that's cute. Doesn't mean anything. You're not going to be able to guard him with your hands out or with your hands behind you. Put him any place you want. Then more specifically about the overall complaints, you shouldn't foul. You walk under a guy and put a foot under him, it's a foul. Sorry. P.J. Tucker was asked about the Lakers' complaints, and he said, I don't think about it. We cry just as much as anybody, and everybody else cries, and everybody thinks other people get the call more than them when they cry all the time. Who cares? And that's the appropriate way to look at it. Now, if I thought the Rockets were wronged as someone that follows the Rockets, would I object to that? Sure, because I think officials can be manipulated, and if you think that your team is being wronged, as PJ says, you're going to try and act out to try and get your squad the benefit of the doubt. But the fact that the Lakers are doing that, my reaction, and I think the Rockets as well, that's not our problem. That's not something that really matters. The only way it matters is if the league decides to start officiating James Harden differently as a result of this outrage. And really, the outrage, it's just because it's the Thursday night, primetime TNT slot, there's no other games that night, and the Lakers are the biggest fan base in the NBA, maybe in sports, and it's just the perfect storm, that spotlight game, Harden getting to the line 19 times just to bring everyone out of the woodworks. And I would worry a little bit if not for the reaction from the official NBA Refs Twitter account. And I said this before, you need to understand that if you're on Twitter, at official NBA Refs is the referees themselves. That's their MBRA, their representation. NBA official is the league office doing clarifications. Generally speaking, the NBA league office is not going to do that much in terms of just individual instruction and tendencies for a crew on a given night. Generally speaking, it's going to come down to the referees themselves. And the fact that the voice of the NBA came down, or the voice of the NBA referees, excuse me, came down so strongly on their Twitter account, at official NBA refs, I retweeted them on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose, two instances of Chris Webber complaining about calls that went against Harden, and the fact that the league office pushed back, or the referee's office, excuse me, not the league office, that distinction is important, pushed back as strongly as they did, that does not indicate that all of a sudden they're going to start to accept that they made some mistakes or that they agree in any part with the outrage. To see them actually go on the offensive as much as they did, that encourages me that they are not going to make changes. They're not going to say, oh, maybe you're right. Because if there's silence, then yeah, I could see getting concerned that, well, with this outrage, are they going to start to look at James Harden differently? And really, James Harden's 29 years old now. None of this is new. The only thing that's new is that it's a huge market team that decided, and its fan base that decided to complain. But with James Harden, these complaints have been out there for years, and it really hasn't changed all that much. But in the terms of the specifics of this particular case, I'm not really worried at all. Whatever small concern there is would be that, well, do the officials in the short term, very short term, decide to overcompensate based on this storyline and the fact that the referee's account is pushing back so strongly? If anything, I think they might dig in their heels even more and enforce that, hey, these things are fouls, which, you know, I went back and looked at the plays in question. I thought most of them were quality calls. James Harden invites contact more than any other player in the NBA. You see a lot of players, especially on shots, who shy away from, even though a defender is in position to foul, they don't put themselves, maybe it's fear of being hurt, I'm not sure what it is, but they don't put themselves, they're just uncomfortable in a position to draw that contact. James Harden does, and as defined by the rule book, it's a foul. If they want to change the rule book, they can, but that's on the league office to do that, and to my knowledge, they have not. So it's on defenses to adjust. They haven't, and even if other NBA players aren't able to exploit it to the same degree that James Harden is, well, you know what? James Harden is getting calls by the book. They're right, as defined by the referee's account on Twitter, and the fact that they're pushing back as strongly as they are, to me, it's a non-story. Like I said, it's not really the Rockets' concern. If the Lakers think they were wronged in any way, that's a Lakers story, not a Rockets story. The only potential Rockets angle is if the league overcompensates. And again, based on that Twitter account coming out as strongly as they did, I'm not anticipating that being a problem for the Rockets over the short term. And even if it somehow were, then the Rockets could push back themselves. But really, I don't think this is all that big of a deal. I think it's just blown out of proportion by a disproportionately large fan base, and one in the Lakers that really hasn't been relevant in a few years. So any game, even a regular season game in December, gets made into more than what it is by a very large and very desperate fan base. It is what it is. If you're the Rockets as a fan, and certainly as a player, it's on to Memphis. All that matters is the result on the court. The Rockets got the win over the Lakers Thursday night. We'll see what they can do in Memphis on Saturday night. Whatever happens, though, of course, we'll have the full recap right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. So if you want, as far as a recap of Memphis's game or any trade activity that may happen on Saturday's launch of, unofficial launch, that is, of NBA trading season, the first day that newly signed players in the offseason can be dealt, well, continue to come back to Locked On Rockets, and also follow me on Twitter if you haven't already. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Those are all ways that you can get updates even before I'm able to record a podcast. And if you want to get podcasts delivered right to your inbox, the best way to do that is to subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, the odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us because we're part of a great network of shows here at Locked On Rockets as part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts across the NBA, the NFL. Yes, that includes the Houston Texans, who have a big game Saturday afternoon. Not Sunday, a Saturday game for the Texans against the New York Jets. You can check them out, same places you find us, along with a handful of MLB and college-specific shows as well. So if you would subscribe to us, that's how you get episodes right when they come out. And if you'd be kind enough to leave a 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential clients, advertising that is, like Action Heat was today, and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And again, as far as today's sponsors over at Action Heat, remember to let them keep you toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter with their battery heated clothing, and then use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Also, a couple of final plugs. If you want to check out our prior content, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. And you can also email questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, whatever it may be, to LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways that you can access our prior content or just get in touch with me, questions about the team or anything else you might want to know about the Rockets or anything else. If I can help you, don't hesitate to reach out. So with that, I hope all of you have a wonderful weekend. And please come back soon, because be it a move on the trade front, the unofficial launch of NBA trading season starts tomorrow, or on the game front, we do have a confirmed game for the Rockets in Memphis on Saturday night, whatever happens, there will be more Rockets-related news this weekend, and whenever it happens, we'll be right here at Locked On Rockets to break it all down, your source for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.